Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. Today is the first day of December of 2020. And yes, it is December.
Okay.
Hi. And this is episode 360. On Teams with me today, we have Suji, Evan, Kale, Kendall, and our very special guest, Corey Sanders, to talk about anything about Azure. And before we get to Corey, we have a couple updates to share as usual. Kale, I think you put those in. Do you want to tell us what they're about?
Yeah, sure. Just two small ones this week. One is a digital event. Because we're still all working from home and doing things. There's a big event happening here in December 3rd. It's around data and analytics and kind of a big deal. Satya, a lot of the crew from Microsoft will be there. Judson's going to have a CEO roundtable. There's also going to be a talk with the CVP, Ronan Kumar, from the data and analytics team. So if you're interested in the future of data and analytics, take a look at that. You can register for it. We'll drop the link in the show notes. And the second one is one that I keep bringing up. It seems like every month is the Azure cost management and billing updates. Super cool stuff. And the reason I bring it up is because there's a lot of customers and I get a lot of feedback saying this is super cool stuff. We love like what Microsoft's doing in this space. So take a look at that. There's a lot of big updates in there around customizations, some new preview views that they've done to pivot to like resource views and things like that. So take a look at that. There's a lot of links up there. We'll drop that in the show notes as well.
Awesome. Well, without further ado, I know most people know who Corey is, but we'll turn it over to you, Corey. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us what you do at Microsoft?
Absolutely. And to tail off that those last comments, everyone should be interested in data and analytics. So that's there's not an if you're interested in the future of data analytics. Anyway. So hi, my name is Corey Sanders. I run a team called the Microsoft Solutions team. I'm responsible for really helping customers understand the value, helping customers understand what sort of the benefits they can get from all of our commercial products and actually driving them to those successful outcomes. So this includes certainly our Azure products, data and AI, apps and infra, IoT, but it also includes our other commercial products, Dynamics 365, Power Apps, Power Automate, Power BI, all the powers, and then Model Workplace as well, which includes Office 365, Teams, sort of all those goodies. So that's what I do now. I've been doing that for about 2 years. Prior to that, I spent about a decade working on the engineering team in Azure. So joined the compute team in 2009 and for about 9 years built out solutions and services, including the original VM service for Azure. So that is... that's my story. Started as a developer many years ago in Windows, fixing bugs in Windows. So that was kind of my original gig that they hired me for that I did not enjoy. And so that's why I did other things instead. So here I am.
I'll have to confess, I met Corey, you and I met, I can't remember when we met. It had to be early on.
It was some customer outage, I'm sure,
yeah,
Evan.
Exactly.
We got pulled in together on. Yes. Not that those happen. And they don't happen anymore. They used to happen. Now they're
don't worry about it. We've been very honest on this show that if we fix every bug in all of our software, Evan no longer has a job. So a few bugs is okay.
I think we'd be okay with, just to be honest. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Yeah. Go on. Sorry.
Yeah. So, but you know, back when we first met, I mean, this was tiny. As a service, I mean, you probably could have put it on a few racks somewhere. And the scale has grown just tremendously. I mean, when you look back on that, did you have And again, in hindsight, it's 2020, but when you, you know, so what sort of drove you to this, to say, I'm going to go do this cloud thing that, you know, cause you're Windows, right? Like,
yeah. No, it's so funny because the, you know, I'd done 5 years as a developer in the Windows team, and I basically decided I wanted to move to a PM job to sort of get more experience working with customers. And I didn't get offers in all the interviews that I did, just to be clear. But the ones that I did get, I got one in Bing, I got one in a couple in Windows, I got one in Windows Phone, and then I got one in Azure. And it was super funny because at the time I was like, I'm going to take the really high risk job and work in Azure because all these other ones are like pretty established businesses. They're just kind of growing from here, right? And it's super funny to look back because you're like, wow, that's really not the way Microsoft, the direction that Microsoft went. And I like to say it's because I took that job, but I know that's not the case. But I, you know, it back then I think I was like the fifth PM to join the team. Like it was the team was small. The I remember the GA of Azure, yeah. Right? It was called Red Dog actually prior to that. And I remember launching to, like, I think when I first got going, we were in four locations. And each location was, again, like you said, it was sort of a row, right? Like it wasn't anywhere near the scale or size. And none of our internal products ran on Azure at that point. Right. Like they all ran on their own stuff. There wasn't a single product that ran on Azure. And so it was definitely an early experiment that has turned into something much grander, which is fun to sort of have gotten the chance to be there at the beginning.
Yeah. So, hey, Corey, nice to meet you. I don't know if we've ever met in person before. But yeah, I think it's interesting because I know that you touched on this. You kind of switched over sides a couple of years ago to bring some of that expertise more to the field, because it is interesting. You know, we work, especially on GBB where I sit, we work a lot with the product group, you know, that feedback loop, all of that. But I feel like it's been revolutionary, kind of the way that you've been able to bring that insight into this area of the business. So what has that been like for you? Maybe what are some of the things that you learned when you bridge that gap, and also where some of the things that you think we're going to continue to focus, especially with the, you know, the impacts of COVID and the way that the cloud is growing?
Yeah, good question, Kendall. I think, you know, one of the things in the final years, it feels like so long ago, the final couple of years when I was in the engineering team, I was spending probably 50% plus of my time just working with customers. It was, you know, I had the opportunity to kind of sit down and you know, look, the transition for cloud is different for every customer, and it's hard for every customer. I mean, there's no customer that makes this transition and it's like, oh, wow, that was easy. Great. What next? Like, it always has work. It's always tough. There's always something that doesn't quite go as you expected. And especially in those early years, because there was no one to draft on. Right. And for many of those customers, it was like, you know, there was no proof point in the value prop. There was no evidence that this was actually, there was some with AWS, but even AWS at that point hadn't yet really made a lot of progress with enterprise. It was still pretty much cloud native solutions that just didn't exist without cloud. And so I spent so much time working with customers, helping them build solutions, helping them sort of think through what it meant to be in the cloud. That was where I got excited about this opportunity, about this shift. As you know, I think that Azure specifically, when we think about sort of quote unquote field and what our expectations of the field, I hope and believe that it just is changing. And certainly was changing even back then. And then, you know, sort of a big effort of mine that, the sort of selling motion is not your classic sales motion, right? You know, the Microsoft classic sales motion, which I actually think we do almost none of at this point, is sort of the, hey, your 3-year license term is up, we're back, right? You haven't seen us for 3 years, but here we are, and we want to go sell you 3 more years. Let's take a look. Oh, you got 100 more seats, 1,000 more seats. Well, that's going to be a little bit more money here. Let's talk about that. Maybe we can cut you a deal. And I don't mean to be disparaging at all. That was the way all licensing software was sold. Like, it wasn't just Microsoft. And sort of what we were quickly seeing with Azure, and, you know, Scott Guthrie was a big proponent of this and so powerful in this transition for us, is that customers needed and wanted us to be there with them constantly as we made those transitions, as we made that work, and as we made that progression. And, you know, I think the CSA was born out of that conversation. But then even just the change on the quote unquote sales side to being sort of more enablers than seller. It's I think of the work that we do, and it's not about sort of you know, trying to get someone to buy someone something and sort of trick them into it and then walk away with our money. Like if the product fails for them, it's like 10x the work for us, right? Like if the customer isn't satisfied, then we don't get the next project or the next conversation. And so it's really in our best interest to make sure the customer is really happy with the project and the work that they're doing with us, which is just a fundamental shift in the way we approach it. And so, like, I like to sort of call us enablers versus sellers. And I think that transition, I still think we have work to do, but I mean, the GBBs, like yourself, Kendall, I think, really sort of embody that that effort. And I think it is so critical. And I think our customers so appreciate it as part of that transition. But more work to be done for sure in the broader field as well.
Corey, I'm curious, you mentioned in the beginning that you cover all Microsoft solutions. And a lot of times we have conversations that are kind of focused on, let's talk about Azure, let's talk about Power Platform, let's talk about Office 365.
I can't get you an Xbox, if that's what you're going to ask. That's not in my area. I'm sorry. That may not be what you were going to say, but that's not in my area. Just
to I was going to ask.
I knew you were, Evan. That's why I preempted it. Anyway, go ahead, Cynthia.
Maybe there's an Xbox as well.
That's right.
But how do we think about these together instead of thinking them as kind of individual solution areas? And how do we have these conversations, or how do like our customers think about it, where maybe I'm using Azure here, but there's some power of using the Power Platform in conjunction with Azure. But as a developer, like, I never really think about Power Platform because it seems like it was meant for a completely different population.
Yeah. No, it's actually one of my big passions right now, and it's something that I talk about a lot with my team and with my directs. You know, one of the interesting things about sort of the way we're organized by solution area, right? So like we have and the goal of that is to have technical depth in those solution areas. So to make sure that we've got people who can go and have a good, hey, like Spark versus sort of Hive or Pig, like, well, let's talk about your data models and let's figure out sort of what is the right answer for you. Like if we had generalists that go across Teams and Modern Work and Dynamics and that, you're not going to be able to get fit folks who can have those deep conversations across each one of those areas. So it makes a lot of sense. But the tricky part is exactly what you said. A lot of the value opportunities that we have is actually when we bring products together across our solution area. And we're super unique in this regard. And this is a sort of a good example, perhaps even in that case, is the ability to take sort of analytics and some of our data data warehousing and our data lake work and being able to connect it with things like Dynamics 365 or Power BI and being able to sort of carry end-to-end business solutions for a customer. Because in the end, customers don't split up by our solution areas, right? We do it because it's how we enable technical depth. But a customer comes and says, I've got a problem. And my problem is I have all of this customer data from my website, from my stores, right, from my marketing team. And it's all in different formats. Some of it's structured, some of it unstructured, right? People are writing random things on some things, and some things I get it from email. And so I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to segment my customers, and I want to be able to drive a more impactful marketing campaign from the output of all those things versus just the output of my previous marketing campaign. Let's also take these other elements, right? And that's a business problem. And that probably involves a whole bunch of Azure services. It probably should and could involve a Dynamics 365 service and customer insights. It probably involves Power BI for visualization. It may even involve Power Apps to be able to bring it all together and turn it into an email output, and maybe a partnership with Adobe to do the actual marketing email that goes out, right? So like, this is really, when you think of a customer solution, this is what it really means. And so I'm really passionate about getting those scenarios by industry and thinking about how we stitch these things together across solution area. I think it's work that we need to do as a company, both product-wise. I think there's products that really stitch together well, and there's products that we need some work to do. And I think there's work that we need to do across some of our sellers and our sort of enablers, as I mentioned, to be able to put these components together in a compelling way. But there's a lot of these things, Power Apps integrated with Azure services like API management, and then exposed as part of Teams. This is becoming actually a very common application model for customers, and that spans three of our solution areas right there. And so, you know, technically that would require three of our sellers to get involved, which feels onerous, right? And so I think there's work to be done on how to sort of stitch these things together better. But I'm also really excited over the fact that we're the only company in the world that has these components to be brought together. I mean, this is just like, what an amazing set of capabilities that we can go put in front of a customer and say, and hey, not only do we have sort of your IoT services to be able to report back, but we also have an MR service for to give you a visualization and a dynamic service to be able to allow you to support those things remotely on location, connected via Teams so that you can call people and discuss while you're fixing it. Like, wow. Like there's, I mean, no one in the world that can put those pieces together. And so I feel we're so lucky and unique in that regard. And I think we just in some ways got to get better and better, better at helping our customers solve their problems versus just land a solution, if that makes sense.
So Corey, looking at, you know, all the various services you mentioned in Azure, in the solution areas, and also all the power platforms, et cetera, which is your favorite? Which is the one that you say I feel the most proud about? I realize this is like asking somebody which is your favorite child, but you must feel like very comfortable with one of those services or love them.
I only have one child, so that's an easy answer for me. It's tricky. I think I may answer that in a couple of ways. Look, VMs, I wrote the first spec on VMs, right? For better or worse, and maybe mostly for worse, but like the, you know,
mostly for worse.
Thank you, Evan. Can someone mute him? You know, I have the original document, like it's a 120-page document outlining how VMs are going to work and how they're going to provision. And I mean, down to the detail of like what's going to be on the CD-ROM that we insert virtually to go provision these things and how that comes from a customer's input on the portal. I mean, like none of that existed. And so obviously I have a special place in my heart for those original services, you know, did the first meeting with Docker, did the first meeting with Red Hat. You know, some of those pretty exciting changes for us that I got to be a part of. Right. So obviously I have a lot of passion around that. It also, you know, happens to also make a lot of money. So that's a nice thing, which I, of course, take credit for entirely and exclusively. But having said that, like, I think the things that I actually get sort of most excited to talk about, going a little bit back even to Cynthia's question, are the services that have the biggest customer business impact. So like in my new role, it turns out VMs actually are perhaps not actually the most customer business impact. Things like Synapse, right, our analytics platform, you actually, like when you sit with a customer, or D365, Dynamics, or Power Apps, right? When you sit with a customer and you see this awe from them on what they've been able to accomplish. I had a customer call this morning with what they've been able to accomplish with our products and changing their business. While certainly VMs are exciting and I think an absolutely necessary service, you don't end up seeing that much awe from it. But I think some of these business impacting services, Power Apps, just like people overnight are like, oh my goodness, like look at what I was able to build last night. With D365, it's like, oh my goodness, like I had no idea I knew this already about my business or my supply chain or my customer base. And I didn't need more data. I just needed to use my data or Synapse, right? And being able to take this and run a sort of an end-to-end input of all this data and be able to say, oh my gosh, like I had no idea I could detect this fraud in this way, right? Wow, like that's amazing. So, you know, those business outcomes, I think, really get me jazzed up. They're the ones I love to talk to customers about. Actually, workplace analytics is maybe the other one, the fourth one in that list, just to maybe hit all my solution areas, IoT maybe as well. But like workplace analytics as well, you're sort of like, oh my goodness, I can actually see what my people are doing and I can go help them be smarter about the way that they spend their day. Like, wow. So these are all just like what a business impact type of change that they offer.
Yeah, Corey, being someone who's there like pretty much at the start of Azure, one question I was thinking about was like, is there something you, if you could go back in a time machine and say, I'm going back to 2009, I would have done differently, right? Or maybe Azure could have been differently, because it feels like at the start, Azure was like very positioned as PaaS, like no one was doing that, right? And then it shifted a little bit to like IaaS, and now, you know, we're kind of back here, you know, with the application level type stuff now. Like, just wondering like what your thoughts are on that, how that progressed, and if there's any like looking backwards, hey, maybe we kind of would have done this earlier or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think there's two, yeah, it's tricky because there's a lot of what has shaped the platform has been, I think, has been based on the learnings gained throughout. Just while we were certainly behind AWS, and AWS was an established business. I think at those early days, AWS had not yet established itself again as sort of like understood what the enterprise needed in those early days, right? And so, you know, there wasn't really anyone to learn from, right? I think, frankly, we did learn a lot from AWS. I think but I think there was also just a perspective that we had some unique understanding. Some of that was correct, some of that was not correct, frankly, in those early days. I think the only thing I'd probably say is I probably would have moved to IaaS sooner. I mean, again, in sort of hindsight, sort of being there were a lot of difficulties in sort of doing that, even just like the platform being ready. I mean, I mentioned that sort of long spec. It took us about a year or more to actually build the infrastructure platform, because the original design of the platform was basically a zero trust sort of model where we did not give any control to the customer to be able to change anything in the operating system, because the system was not built to trust it. It was basically the other way around. We implicitly entrusted the VMs that were running on the machine, which of course you can't do when your customer has complete control over the VMs, right? They can do some nasty things. And so you have to sort of flip the model on its head, which required a complete rewrite of everything we were doing. So I think, you know, I would say probably doing IaaS earlier. I think those early versions of PaaS were sort of interesting. And I think we learned a lot about how to support customers in sort of the new cloud model. But they've so fundamentally changed thanks to the sort of advent of containers that I don't think there's anything we necessarily could have done differently, frankly, in those early days. So, and I actually think, you know, our increased focus now on application modernization, I say sort of, I think the timing is actually quite right, because I think that that we're seeing at least a lot of the enterprises really starting to partition out their thinking on what's going to be my infrastructure and sort of my lift and shift and sort of the deep understanding that I'm going to get this percentage of gains with that for app modernization. It's going to cost me this much to do it, but it's going to give me this much more discount. And so it's basically a balancing act between that. I don't think we understood that as well. And I think it'd be hard for me to say we should have done something different because of that. But doing IaaS earlier, that's kind of a slam dunk answer, frankly, because I think we knew and should have known quicker to do that. Sometimes it takes learning, and sometimes it takes a lot of customer feedback to really understand what people need.
It's interesting, you know, when you say that, Corey, because I think when I look at where the platform has evolved, we started out with the assumption not only of the zero trust, but of the assume everything will fail all the time. And they're just sort of going not up and down and up and down, but like, failure is a super common thing, right? And IaaS is completely the other way. There today are still lots of workloads that if this one machine goes down, that workload is down, right? Or at least has a DR, you know, HA failover, right? Where it's pretty impactful to downstream users. And as we've shifted to IaaS, that's forced us to get better up and down the stack. And that has, you know, the benefits of that just are so broad, you know, because it benefits PaaS, it benefits data scenarios, it benefits Office, like it benefits everything, you know. And so I think I would probably second sort of your thing, you know, and say IaaS, while the vision was probably not wrong, IaaS has allowed us to learn and do some things that we never would have figured out if we'd have been on PaaS, because we would have just sort of dealt with, yeah, the VM reboot or whatever, just you got 12 other roles, what do we care?
Yep. And I think, Evan, yeah, to add to that, I think that's exactly right. And I think it's I think we overload sort of IaaS versus PaaS in that conversation. I think in some ways it's actually the assumption that we had in the very early days was that the cloud would be used primarily for net new application development.
Yeah.
And that's it, which then means you could code in your assumptions around failure, right? Some of the largest deployments that we had on the original worker role were people still jamming lift and shift into worker roles, right? Like, which was just like nutty. But some of the largest customers that we had back then, that was what they were trying to do, which was, I guess, the signal to us that, hey, maybe we should go build this IaaS thing. But yeah, I mean, I think your point, Evan, like the progression from not just only moving from PaaS to IaaS, but also that customers were not going to be able to rewrite their apps to get to the level of scale that we wanted to with them running in the cloud. And we just needed to assume that they needed to get the level of resiliency that they would get on-prem, right? We used to call it gold-plated hardware back in the day and used to sort of joke, we're never going to be gold-plated hardware. Well, it turns out we've got now a focused failure rate that's pretty close to gold-plated hardware. I don't know why you'd like put gold on your hardware. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
It doesn't conduct heat very well. So anyway, but...
So as an original Windows guy, how do you feel about just the move towards Linux and open source and us embracing that and maybe not having done that in the beginning? I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are on the way that we've evolved from that perspective. From the early days of Azure.
Love it. And I was a part of the original conversation around that with the pitch that was made to Steve on that, right? Because that was back pretty early. And it turns out it's funny because it was, again, sort of a timing thing. There was actually very little pushback when we started going down the IaaS route. We were just like, we're going to do Linux. Like, we got to do Linux, right? And there was very little pushback in the system on that. What I think is really interesting was tracking the progression, and you can sort of go back in some of our press releases over time, of the percentage of our cloud that was Linux, right? Because at the original launch, I think the first sort of report that I sent out about people running on our platform, which was like maybe there was like 140 VMs or something. I think it was like 13% was Linux, right? Like that was the lowest number. And I think we were shocked that on day one, 13% was Linux. We were like, what happened? Like we've been real wrong about this, huh? That like the first thing that Microsoft launches for VMs and 13% of it's Linux, like there's probably some room to grow here. And certainly there was. So, you know, I think it's been great. I think that it's also been, frankly, a progression for us, right? I mean, that like sort of launching Linux, but just kind of just doing it as sort of, you know, just kind of giving it lip service, right? I mean, the original launch of Linux was lip service. When most of us had no idea what we were really supposed to be doing with our Linux support. Over time, learning, going into and doing sort of big conversations with Docker, really sort of understanding what open source meant, then starting to contribute to open source, offering open source service on things like Cosmos DB, right? And then, of course, even just like solutions like GitHub, right? I mean, which is now probably one of the biggest open source solutions that we have, becoming sort of the cornerstone of our app dev model. So I feel like the progression's been really exciting to see as a company. And it's also just like, it's funny because it's like all the memes that we used to have about, oh my God, like what I always used to joke about is I used to say, we know we've been successful when people stop talking about us doing open source. Like, as exciting as those early days were, where it was like every time we launched something, we got this big press article, Microsoft does this with open source. And it was like this big deal because we were doing something. And I was just like, I like it because press is fun, but like we haven't made it until people stop making a big deal out of us doing it because it's not a big deal that we're doing it, right? And I feel like we're there. Like, I don't think we don't see this anymore. Like, there's no longer like, I can't believe Microsoft, the original creator of hating open source, now has done, you know, this MongoDB support on Cosmos DB, whatever it may be. Like, we don't see that anymore. So again, I feel like that's actually sort of success in itself.
Corey, I know during this pandemic that everyone has been home, a lot of our customers either thinking about what they can do about it. Has the pandemic kind of made things go faster, go slower, go differently? Can you share some of the stories with us?
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting because I think in some, it's sort of probably what you'd expect, right? In some places, it has gone a lot faster because of the need for using some of these services. You know, I recently did a video with MSC, Mediterranean Shipping Company, where they were sort of in this progression to move most of their apps and solutions and collaboration software all to the cloud. I think the sort of the launch of the pandemic, and they actually happen to have a bunch of offices in China, so they were in some ways more aware of the potential outcome than many of us earlier, at least. They dramatically accelerated that transformation, right? So they moved much, much quicker towards those motions. Similar sort of things, you know, I talked a little bit about the HoloLens with sort of a factory line working with Dynamics. Mercedes-Benz similarly accelerated a bunch of their sort of IoT-based, remote-based work. So, you know, when the solution was around enabling remote capabilities, when the solution was around, you know, expanding out things like e-commerce, right? We've seen some of our e-commerce solutions grow pretty dramatically as folks depend, you know, retail folks depend more and more on their website and less on their in-store. Those types of things have really expanded and accelerated, and it's been really exciting to see. Obviously, healthcare as an industry has expanded quite a bit for unfortunate reasons, frankly. But I think there are some aspects that things have slowed down, projects have slowed down. And I think part of that is just as people reevaluate sort of how they're spending current capital versus future capital. So we have seen a little bit of slowdown as well. So I think it's been a little bit of both, and it really depends on the project. But for the most part, I think we've seen folks who were already underway with the cloud migration and doing it for the reason of reducing their sort of single location or on-premise location requirements, they accelerated. For folks who were still sort of at the early stages and were building out plans, they paused because in some ways sort of starting something when everyone's remote that you did not yet have comfort in or you hadn't yet sort of perfected took on a lot of risk, especially as you were just trying to keep the business running. So, you know, I think we saw a little bit of both.
Corey, you come from a developer background. How do you still keep your hands dirty, you know, writing any code on the side maybe, or what's the last piece of code that you wrote, actually? Let's just ask it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what I spend most of my time on is playing around with services and solutions that I'm going to talk to customers about. Like, I like to be able to, you know, sort of actually talk to it in with some real experience. So the last bit of code I will admit I wrote was a part of Power Apps, and so I did do actually it was I guess maybe July or August, I can't remember, and I took one of sort of the Power Apps templates for the health tracking, the COVID, one of the COVID apps that we had, and I went in and made some changes to it and tweaked it and messed with it and sort of pulled in data sources from other things and so on. And so that was a lot of fun, actually. You know, it made me feel good because I haven't actually done sort of deep, you know, when I was in Windows, I was actually working in the kernel and USB and TCP/IP Whoa. For a while. So it was all C and assembly. Like, I did not actually do much managed code. So, but I hadn't done it in so long. It was really fun to sort of feel good about, hey, I can still code because I'm coding in Power Apps. I'm sure there's a lot of developers that are out there sort of saying, well, but, you know, I felt good about it. I think my next project that I would really, and that's why I made this joke about what Kale said, the next project that I really want to go play with, is actually doing some work with Synapse and Databricks. Actually, I'd love to do some work there. And I've done some work now setting up some interesting things with Dynamics, with D365, with Customer Insights. And the one that I want to go play with is supply chain as part of D365 as well. So these are things in my list. And I'm working on the Power Apps integration in Teams is something that I'm also playing around with as well. So that's I know, Evan, my list is getting long. So I need this is why we need the holiday, so I can go do the fun work versus my day job, I guess. Not that this isn't fun. This is obviously very fun.
I just think it's funny that somebody who is so instrumental in Azure and sort of what Azure has enabled you sort of followed, like when you listed the things you were doing and playing with, right? You sort of went from, okay, I used to write like hardcore code, and now I'm doing a power app and these software as a service things. And I mean, that is where the industry is going, right? So you're following along, but it sort of matches what we've got, where we've gone as a platform, where our customers have gone, and it matches the history. It makes sense.
Yep. And I forgot one. I just got today my SIM card for my Surface Duo. So I'm really excited about that. Another product that I sell and I need to get comfortable with. So if you guys don't have the Surface Duo, it's that little foldy. I don't have it here.
That's
actually,
what we should have asked for instead of the Xbox.
I know. Well, opportunity lost. Opportunity lost.
You know, Kale is a big advocate of our blockchain and our, you know, distributed identity and those kind of things. What, you have any thoughts around that from a solutions perspective? What are you seeing from our customers?
Sorry, Suja, I apologize. I was distracted by the cat that Kendall just sent along in chat. So she sent a picture of her cat in chat, and I apologize that distracted me from your question. Please ask it again. You guys can decide if you want to cut that or not.
No, we're keeping it.
It happens all the time.
So, Suja, go ahead. Ask your question again, please.
Page news on that. As your podcast, he's getting a pick.
So Kale's, you know, our blockchain kind of advocate, expert, right? And wondering what you're seeing from a solutions perspective in that space. And that's a big emerging space. We're hearing a lot about it every, you know, thanks to Kale keeping us honest over there. Just wondering if some feedback from you on that.
Yeah, it's one of these interesting ones that, like, I have found sort of a couple things, right? It's super, super interesting technology, right? Like, it's like really, really intriguing technology. And for a while, I've, you know, Kale, you should maybe yell at me after this, but like, I feel like we've sort of, as an industry, not Microsoft, but as an industry, I feel like we've been searching for a use case for the cool technology, right? Now, I do think there's some really interesting ones that have come out. Supply chain is one that I actually, especially multi-party supply chain, that's a super cool one. And that is one where you're sort of like, okay, I get it, right? Like think of the middlemen that I've now gotten able to remove by taking advantage of this. Okay, I can see the benefit by saying it's a consistent ledger that cannot be mucked up with across the pipeline. I don't need someone tracking it along the way. And we've seen really cool scenarios. Starbucks tracking their beans all the way back to the farm is actually a really real scenario, a really interesting scenario, and I think a good usage case. So I think there's more coming, frankly. Like, I think that's just one that's sort of top of mind, given the importance of supply chain, especially again in this time where fewer people involved is always good. Right. Just as we sort of try and avoid too many people being involved on the ground as part of these processes. So, you know, I think there's going to be more and more opportunity for it. I think there's going to be opportunities for more collective work. I think as we think of things like, you know, we're getting pretty involved in some greenhouse gas emission tracking and sort of standards across different organizations. I actually think blockchain is going to be an important part of that conversation as well, as we think about sort of standards and being able to track and share numbers and so on. Whenever you cross multiple parties, sometimes competitive or at least not necessarily friendly, sort of standardizing that communication, that sharing, that sort of joint ledger in a secure way is actually a pretty interesting set of scenarios. So that would be at least what I think where the direction is going. There's more to be done in banking and financial services, frankly, obviously Bitcoin being built around it. But I think there's still there's a lot of policy work that probably needs to happen before it becomes truly real for any sort of financial services work.
Well, thank you so much for your insights, Corey. Unfortunately, time flies when you're having fun.
It does.
And
it does.
We really appreciate you coming on the show. Hopefully, we'll have you again very soon.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. Really appreciate it. And let's see the cat. Let's see. There we go. That's a distraction.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.